Hello and welcome to Elevate to Success, discussions on project management and leadership ideas, tips and techniques of being a project manager, agile practitioner, or a leader in your organization. So let's go. Okay, welcome to another podcast episode. I'm your host, Lloyd Philip B., and the topic for today is A Manager's Guide to Managing Change. This is an important topic, and it'll be good for our listeners, and it'll be very, very interesting. But before we dive into this great topic, I have a special guest with us. Her name is Rita Burgett Martel. She is a successful business owner, a professor of business transformation and innovation, a thought leader to Fortune 500 executives, an accomplished author of two books, Change Ready, How to Turn Change Resistance into Change Readiness, and her other book, Defining Moments, Seizing the Power of Second Chances to Create the Life You Want. Now, these books can be found on Amazon. She's also a wife and mother and currently resides in the state of Tennessee, but was a California at one time. Rita, did I miss anything?
No, that sounds great. Yeah, I did a lot of work down in Silicon Valley, so was fortunate to be able to be in California. You know, in the 1990s when things were beginning to happen, exciting time. So yeah, 28 years I was there. Loved it.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I can't wait for our listeners to hear about this topic. Hopefully they'll be able to take back with them and apply that to their work. Go to your books and kind of download them from Amazon. Experiencing change, whether it's minor or major change in our life or in our organization, you know, our emotions becomes like a roller coaster ride, right? And, you know, we get excited, we then get confused, and then anxiety kind of kicks in. So, you know, for some people, change can be really tough and can be very disruptive, not just in work, but also together with relationships at work or, you know, relationships at home and also their personal family life. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we're looking at providing some insights and help our listeners who are managers in terms of change. I'm going to pass the baton over to you. So where would you like to begin? And there are probably steps to consider. So I'm going to pass it on to you.
Okay, great. Well, at first, let's talk about the difference between change that we choose and change that we aren't expecting, and it comes along and totally disrupts our life. And so this year, we've all been experiencing the change that's happened from the COVID-19 that's totally turned our work world upside down. And you know, some things are good. Working from home, you spend more time with your family, but it's like you're kind of living in the office. So with any change, there's the good part of change, the benefits, and then there's the loss. But there's always some disruption. When we have change that's unexpected and change that we don't choose, then, you know, we tend to try to resist that as much as possible. And we feel out of control because this is something that we didn't want to happen. It changed the future that, you know, we thought we would have. So many people in the hospitality industry have lost their jobs. I have a couple of clients I've been working with on a career coaching basis. So, you know, the change that we are currently experiencing this year, we can look at and see the different reactions. Some people are still in denial and angry and, you know, don't want to wear a mask, and you know, they're kind of having that reaction. Other people are, they've swung to the acceptance part, and, you know, this is what we have to do right now. We don't like it, but I'm going to follow the guidelines because that makes sense. So we have some people that have moved to the other end and accepting the change, and then some people who are in the middle and still confused and, you know, wanting to get back to normal, which that's not going to happen. We'll move forward and life will not be exactly the way it is now. But I think this has really created a huge change for our culture.
No, I agree 100%. Yeah. I mean, for the last several months, it's, you know, it's been a constant change on, you know, almost like on a week to week basis. But also, like you said, you know, going from office to home and then readjusting to the home type setup, you know, versus going into the work and you have your regular routine. So it's a major change for some folks. I know for me it was, because I had to set up my room, or you know, my one of my bedrooms into a total office. You know? So it's you know, understandable.
So you never leave work. You never leave work. It's just, it's right there.
And, exactly.
You know, it's been good for some families because parents have had the opportunity to spend more time with their children, but then having to balance their children if they're in school and, you know, they are learning from home, and then the parents are working from home. And it's crazy time for a lot of people. But I think we can also look at this year and see how quickly, how innovative we've been, and how quickly we've adapted to things being different. You know, anytime you have a change where you have a sense of urgency, which is what we've had this year. I mean, we didn't have time to resist anything. There wasn't time to say, well, I don't like what's going on here, or I don't want to work this way. And companies had to be very innovative. And you know, I love the head of Salesforce, Mark Benioff. Yeah. And I heard him talk about adapting to this change and how Salesforce, you know, was looking forward, not looking backward. And so that's what successful companies do, but it's a very disruptive process. So this year we've had a sense of urgency to be innovative about how we work, about how we learn, you know, with the remote learning that most places have to do, and then interacting with our doctors, with the telehealth. So it's been a lot of change. And then, of course, people getting sick and, you know, losing people who are close to us. And I mean, this is hitting us on every level that we define as our security in the workplace, the income, the health. It affects our relationships. So it's a lot going on in the world outside of us. And then we have it, what's going on in our home, what's going on in the workplace, what's going on in our head, you know, how we're reacting internally to all this. So, yeah, it's an unusual time. Let's just say that.
No, there's some pros behind that as well, too. You got more family togetherness,
so. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's also new ideas that I think mm-hmm. a lot of people are beginning to think, you know, what mm-hmm. are, like you said, new innovative ideas that are coming out more so. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, it may be a good thing.
And I think the trust between a manager and employee has been strengthened because, you know, being in the world of technology, we work remotely a lot, but a lot of industries haven't done that. And so,
right.
you know, there are some managers that have a mindset that if I can't see you, you're not working. And if you work from home that day, that means you're out grocery shopping and doing laundry and, you know, not working. And so having all of this happen this year, I think has shown managers that employees can be productive. They don't have to be, you know, in the same area. You don't have to be monitoring their work, you know, every minute of every hour. So I think, you know, that aspect has been good. But like with every change, there are gains, the benefits, and then there are losses. So yes, there is a process that leaders can use when managing change that will increase the probability of having a successful outcome. So we can talk about that process.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, now it seems like it's more emphasis on performance. You know, are mm-hmm. you working? And it's more of, okay, here's the task that we need to do. Here's the goals. Are you delivering, right, in terms mm-hmm. of performance-wise? So I think they're looking at those more often than before. So that's, in a way, that's kind of a good thing because we definitely want to change that mindset as well, too.
You're right. Yeah, no, I think it will strengthen the relationships. And always there's some people who just can't work that way. They need the structure of going someplace, you know, 5 days a week and the routine of stopping at Starbucks or Pete's for coffee and then, you know, going in and spending the first hour talking with their colleagues and then doing some work and going to some meetings and then spending time talking to their colleagues. So I think the actual amount of work time of you're focused and productive is probably increased over, you know, what you actually accomplished in the office. But again, you know, it's just what we've kind of been thrown into with this. And I think everybody's done the best that they could and managed it in the best way possible. But in normal times, you know, the experience that I've had in the consulting work that I did, a lot of it was with technology implementations and preparing for the process change and, you know, the way that people work. And so I had a lot of experience with implementing Oracle, implementing SAP, implementing Salesforce, you know, doing a lot of customized off-the-shelf implementations with, you know, customized technology. And a lot of process standardization, global process standardization, attempting to do work in the same way around the world, you know, getting everybody to agree on the right way to do a certain
That's
process.
True.
So I've had a lot of experience with that. Uh-huh. A lot of resistance, and you encounter a lot of resistance because people tend to think their way is the best way. And so you have to learn how to build agreement with people across regions, across countries, across departments. And so that's fun. Right. That's kind of fun work. And then I've done a lot of organizational restructuring and a lot of restructuring of IT departments, because IT has really changed so much over the past 20 years. I mean, it's just, you know, totally different than the way it was back in the mid-90s. So I've done a lot of work with that, and then some post-merger integration across industries. So yeah, I'm doing all that different kind of work where the driver for change is different. But people's reactions and the process that we go through to plan for that change and to achieve and sustain a successful change is basically the same.
On that thread of process change and how a manager can help their employees in this process change and standardizing the change, you know, what are the things that you would recommend for them to take away when they're, especially when they're working with their employees and just probably the whole organization as a whole? It's like you said, implementation, you know, if you're looking at a big implementation, it's going to change a lot of the manual processes or the existing process within that company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a change has a ripple effect. And so you think something is a small change, but it's not, because it changes everything it touches. And so often we underestimate the impact of change. We think, oh, it's just this application, or it's just this one process. But the ripple effect affects other areas and other processes. So success planning for change starts with having a shared vision. And so people want to know why. Why are we doing this? How is this going to make our life better? How is this going to make the company more successful? How is this going to increase our productivity or increase our customer base or improve customer satisfaction? So starting with the vision that answers the question of why are we doing this? What does success look like? And I've had so many projects where no one really defined what success looked like. They just went about, you know, beginning to implement whatever the technology was. And but often, you know, the vision is at the top of the organization, and they know why they're investing $40 million in this technology. They see far ahead, and they know where they're leading the company and the technology that they need to get them there. But that message often isn't communicated down in the organization. And I've had many projects where, you know, the vision starts at the C-level, but then the C-level goes away. They, you know, they're fired,
right, exactly.
Or they leave for another job. And these are projects that you can take 12 to 18 months to implement. And so the project managers weren't part of that initial decision on investing money in this technology. And so they really don't have the clear vision or a clear answer to the question why. And so that's extremely important. And often when I go into companies and they're in the middle of a project, we have to, you know, kind of take a deep breath and halt for a minute and say, okay, why are we doing this? What does success look like? That's important because you can't get alignment across the different departments or different regions or countries if you don't have a shared vision. And often you create that shared vision based on a shared problem. And so you talk about, okay, this is going to make life better because it's solving these problems. And so with process change, you're changing the process to become more efficient or to standardize across, you know, departments or countries or whatever. And so, you know, there are problems that you're solving. And so identifying the pain points, you know, mapping out the process as it is and identifying those pain points can be helpful. But I always liked working backwards from the future. And so having that vision of what success looks like. And so having agreement with people who work this process on what is it we're working to achieve. So what problems do we want to solve? And then if you have that shared vision of success, then you can work backwards to where we are today and identify those gaps. What are the gaps? And what do we need to change in order to bridge those gaps and have this consistent process that's going to be better? So vision.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that in terms of vision. And what the definition, what is the definition of what success to them? You know, like you said, that's towards the end. And then looking at what are the successes down the road when you start with working backwards, like, and, you know, like you said, working on the gaps. Absolutely. I think that type of change creates a sense of hope for the future for people when they start looking at this is what we're going to do.
Right. And so they're all part of making it happen. They're involved. And involvement is critical. You want to involve people who are impacted by this process or who are working this process or who can influence the outcome of a project. So the involvement strategy is really the second step. And that involvement strategy is based on, or engagement strategy, a lot of, you know, companies call it, but it's based on the impact. And so once you have a vision of what success looks like and you've identified the gaps between our desired future and our current state, then you can look at, oh, who's going to be affected by this? Who's going to have to do work in a different way? And what is that degree of impact? Is it high impact? Is it medium impact? Is it low impact? And so then you can develop your engagement strategy so that you involve the right people at the right time and in the right way. So it's very important to look at that timeline because you don't want to involve everybody in the beginning. You want to inform some people so they understand what's, you know, what's going on. But the greater the impact, the greater the level of involvement, or the greater the level of influence over the outcome, then the greater the level of involvement. So the employees and key stakeholders.
It's what you're saying is, okay, we talked about the vision and then the engagement and the conversations. So open conversations about all the possibilities with everybody and just, you know, kind of networking and get an idea, feedback, whether it's positive or negative, get the pros and cons from the stakeholders, from employees, is part of the plan for change, right?
Right. It's a very important point because the better you do that, the better you do that. Sounds a little strange, but you know, the more involvement you have, the less resistance you're going to have because people have had a voice, And, you know, they have a voice. They're sharing their thoughts. They're sharing their ideas. And you want to create an opportunity for that. And you want to acknowledge that. And then you want to keep people informed about the decisions that are made. Because everybody's ideas are not going to be the ones that you end up implementing. You know, you want to open up for discussion, but then you have to narrow down to making a decision that's the best decision for the organization. So involvement strategy, having a really good involvement engagement strategy of key stakeholders and employees that are going to have to work in a different way is very important. Part of that is communication strategy. So communication is not the same as engagement. And a lot of leaders think because they've made an announcement, this is going to happen, and then they make an announcement, we're going live, they've done enough. But it's not.
True.
So there's communication.
True.
You plan your communication at the different milestones and timeline, and you integrate that with your project plan. So the integration of change management with project management is very important. But communication is different from engagement.
Which brings up a concern for some companies where I think that's where one of the major gaps is the engagement piece of it. Versus, like you said, versus communications. We can put together some surveys and documents and showing them the project plan, you know, doing a presentation to different groups within the organization. But in terms of the involvement is getting into the nuts and bolts of, say, the implementation or the change that's going to occur. Is that fair to say?
Right. And it's going to be different at different phases of the project. And so in the beginning, when you kick off a project, you want to make sure that the leaders of the different departments that are going to be affected by this are involved in making that decision. And so you have that leader alignment, and it's leader at all levels. It's not just the, you know, the C level or the senior level. And often, the managers at the middle level are not involved in the decision and, you know, don't really have a voice in how things are going to happen, but then they're responsible for the implementation. So they have to explain what's happening to their employees, and often they haven't been involved or informed. So yeah, in the beginning, the leaders at all levels, and I'd like to go down to supervisors or team leads. I think that's just extremely important in the beginning. And then as you move through the project and the different phases, then you design an involvement strategy that meets the needs of the requirements of that phase. So it's not the same, you know, throughout the project. You won't have the same people involved at the same time.
You'll have a set of individuals that will embrace this change. Then you'll have some individuals that will kind of be iffy about it, and then you'll have some that will be kind of negative. I don't know if it's because of job security, because of the new process. I've come to realize don't damper any negative feedback from any of the employees, but in kind of reinforce the positiveness behind it so they can hopefully jump into the wagon with working this change. How would you go about helping those folks that are kind of really negative and just don't want to see this change because it may affect them and their position in the company?
Right. Resistance is really interesting. It's interesting to observe and challenging to deal with. And I've seen it throughout all the organizations I've worked with at all levels and different projects. And so, you know, you're going to have some resistance. That's, you know, just the way it is. And in the beginning of the project, you may have people who are on board and they think this is great. And then when you get to the phase of the project where the impact of the project is understood and the amount of change is understood, then all of a sudden they don't think it's such a great idea because it affects them. And so you have to monitor resistance throughout the project because it will change. And then you're going to have some people in the beginning who are resistant because they don't understand why that vision that I talked about or that definition of success, you know, that hasn't happened. And so they're resisting because they don't understand. And if you take the time to inform them and involve them and listen to their concerns, then you can minimize that resistance. And often, you know, they become your biggest supporters. And so I always wanted to take the loudest voice in the room and, you know, make them responsible for something, because you always have people who not necessarily have the title of leader, but other employees look to them. And so the peer power is what I call it. And so you want to take the peer power, the people who have the loudest voice and other employees look at, and involve them in some way where they have some responsibility for the outcome, because they're going to have a voice no matter what. And you want that voice to be a positive voice. So identifying people who have that power is important. And you don't want to get involved in a power struggle with them. That's not what you're there to do. So you want to get them on board. One great way to do that is building change networks. Change ambassadors, communication leads, some type of structure. Because for change to be successful and getting people on board, especially in large organizations, large global organizations, you need to have a structure where the involvement and communication can take place. And so establishing that change network or ambassador network in the very beginning, and then having them have responsibilities, you know, throughout the project for communicating and maybe doing some training before you get ready to go live. That is a wonderful way to minimize the resistance because they're responsible for the outcome. So, again, resistance is going to happen, and you just have to monitor it throughout the project. And sometimes you have to look at someone and say, okay, so what? It's too bad you're not happy about this. It's going to happen anyway. And they don't really have the power to stop it. And so there's some people you just have to kind of nod and, yes, I understand you don't like this. I understand. And we're doing this. And so you continue to be positive. You continue to say, I understand, and we're doing this. And you don't let them deter you. So you have to assess someone's ability to really influence the outcome. And if they don't have any ability to influence the outcome, then you really can't spend a whole lot of time investing your energy with them. You have to invest your energy where it's going to make the biggest difference. So
I agree.
Again,
yeah. That is so true. But does that also go also with diverse teams that are working offshore? You know, there's different types of culture, and I'm guessing that having that type of strategy and working with resistance should be able to work with diverse groups offshore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, understanding the different cultures. I had a global project at Chevron that was in the HR group, and they had five processes, HR processes they were standardizing. And so I facilitated the groups, and we had representatives from 20 countries. So I'm facilitating a week-long process redesign session with people from 20 different countries. And I look at it now, and it was fun. It was so much fun, but oh my God, we had long days, and I still remember, some of the people from different countries have been in the Middle East and Nigeria, and oh my gosh, and we wanted to standardize a performance review process, and it became clear that you cannot do performance reviews in Nigeria the same way that you did them in San Francisco. Because in Nigeria, they have different tribes, and a manager could be killed for saying something to, you know, a certain tribe. and Pakistan, I remember there was a lot of resistance. And so we had to look at what are the cultural differences and what can we do the same in different countries and what has to be tailored in that country to their culture. And so we ended up with about an 80% consistent process, which I think is about all you can hope for. But yes, but culture is interesting because not only is it culture in different countries, but in different parts of an organization. You're going to have the culture of a sales department, culture of a marketing department, culture of procurement, supply chain, engineering, finance. Every department, every function has its own culture. And so you don't have to be global to experience the cultural differences. Even, people, and this is changing because so many people are moving, but it used to be that you had a culture in the South that was very different, or culture in Texas was very different mm-hmm. than the culture in New York or culture in California. And so culture is, it's very interesting to understand the different cultures and respect them, but have the shared vision. And so we're all working together to achieve the same goal and focusing on that.
We talked about shared vision, involvement, mm-hmm. Involvement, engagement strategy in mm-hmm. terms of communication, the mm-hmm. difference between engagement and communications, building that strategy, having that conversation. We talked a little about resistance, creating change ambassadors, which is something that's really good to have, or at least having that mm-hmm. type of ambassador network. And mm-hmm. is it fair to say that there should be a cultural differences strategy if, say, you're dealing with offshore teams or different companies globally?
Yeah, having a respect for their cultures, and again, having them involved in a way where they say, this won't work in my country. Or, right. And then we ask, how could it work in your country? So again, looking at what would success look like, where can we be consistent, and where do we have to understand that there is a cultural difference and respect that. It was always interesting to me when I first started doing global projects that I would go to Rotterdam, I would go to Munich, and there would be an American manager. And I would think, why? I mean, we're having American managers in these different cultures, and we're wanting these different cultures to work the way we work in America. Maybe we could learn something from them. I just felt like we weren't learning. And hopefully, that's changed a little bit. But I felt like there was a lot we could learn from other cultures instead of going in and saying, this is the way we do it in America, therefore this is the way we will do it around the world.
Right, exactly.
that's the way that it was. Something else that was extremely important was defining a decision process. And mm-hmm. often I would go into projects and there was no process, no criteria for how we are making decisions. And so decisions were made by the loudest voice in the room. And it might not necessarily be a decision that would be the best decision for the company. But people didn't have a structure where they could speak up because they hadn't defined what the success looked like. What's our criteria for measuring that success? Because that could become your decision criteria. And so when you're looking at making a decision, you evaluate your choices, your options, against the criteria you've established to achieve success. And if it doesn't meet the criteria, then you don't make that decision. You don't go with that option. And so then it's an objective way of making a decision instead of, the loudest voice in the room. So I did a lot of work in that area, and that really made a difference when you had that decision criteria defined. Another, and you've probably seen that a lot yourself in the work that you've done, a decision is made and nobody understands why.
Many times.
And it doesn't work. It ends up not being a decision that takes you where you want to go, but no one speaks up because they really don't have anything to justify making a decision in a different way. So establishing that decision criteria is extremely important and will increase the probability of a successful project. Something else that's really important is integrating activities. So any change management activities, integrating it in a project plan, because change management is a capability that it's important for everyone to develop. And what I noticed is if I integrated my change plan in a project plan, then we could all work together as one team instead of having a change team and a project team. So the integration is extremely important. And just seeing change as a capability that managers need to develop. And that's one benefit of establishing that change network, because you're teaching people how to successfully manage change. And it's a capability they can use with other projects. So there are many reasons to do that.
Great. Yeah. So we're talking about integration activities. That's something new. I like that idea of that one. And are there any, after integration, what would be the next steps for our manager to look at?
Well, then you look at what you're going to take to increase our readiness for change. How ready are we to adopt this new process, to implement this technology? So being able to gauge readiness, what does readiness look like? And what will it take to be ready for go live? And usually that's some type of training to prepare people for working in a different way. So making sure that the people who are going to be working in a different way have been trained on the technology, on the new process, and, that's integrated together because, under technology affects process, affects the way you operate, again, the ripple effect of change. So making sure that's understood and people are prepared. So having a readiness checklist before you go live. So it's not just the technology ready? Are we ready to go live from a technology perspective? Are we ready to go live from a process perspective? Are we ready to go live from a people perspective? So that people, process, technology, and having the readiness checklist be based on those three things.
That is so true.
Yeah,
that is so
that's
true.
Critical. And if you're doing it, a phase go live where you're implementing different applications at different times or different locations at different times, or however you're doing this, making sure that you have that readiness defined for each one of those go lives and different places.
I agree with you 100% on that one. That's increasing having a readiness pre-production, pre-deployment, and having that understanding from a technology standpoint, from a people standpoint, from a process standpoint. Mm-hmm. Because once you go live and the people aren't engaged, they're not ready for it, and you have a deadline to go live, this can be a ball of confusion, right?
Mm-hmm. So, it will be, and you're going to have a mess on your hands. Unfortunately, I've seen that, and I'm sure you have too. And the last point I want to make is something that's often overlooked, and that's sustaining the change. Because what I saw was, we would be there on a project and we would go live and then we would go away. And we hadn't looked at post go live from a people perspective. We hadn't really identified who owned the change once we went live. So that sustain phase, we learned when we didn't do that, we learned from it. So how I did change management work back in 1996, that evolved into a better process because we learned. There were a lot of lessons learned. And so then understanding that we can't go live and go away. We have to have the ownership defined, and we have to plan. We have to have a sustained plan. And so how are we going to measure success in 6 weeks, in 2 months, in 12 weeks? And who's going to own that? So a good sustained plan really involved managers of the organization. And, you know, employees, often it was the people who had been on the change network, and we defined what are the metrics, what are the metrics, and who owns this. And so if we had a good sustained plan, then we had a high probability of a company realizing the benefits of change and being able to sustain that. So, you know, hopefully that's happening more and more these days, because we are learning from what we didn't do.
True. Yeah, we're always learning, we're always looking for things to improve on. In terms of, you said sustaining the change. So that's, we're talking about production, and I know that there's this cycle of sustainability, which is stabilizing the change and process, and normalizing the change and process at that cycle, and then looking at process improvements once you have normalized your process. Okay, and let's look at now improving our process and then tweaking it as we go along to see what could be better, what can be removed. You know, and I think that's just a continuous journey.
It is continuous. And, you know, I used to have people say, I'll be so glad when this change is over with, when we get this implemented. So, well, it's going to continue. It's going to continue on. But what I loved was when I would check in, you know, a few weeks later, and what I would hear people saying is, I can't believe we ever did it any other way. And so the new way had become, you know, a good way, and had become, oh, it's just the way we do things. So, you know, that's really how you define success. When you hear people saying, I can't believe we ever did it any other way. You know, this is really good.
That's good. And maintaining a good sense of humor, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. And again, you know, you don't want the power struggles. You don't want the dictators. It takes a lot of people at different levels to achieve success. And it's important to, you know, acknowledge their involvement and the need that we need them to be involved. And success is dependent on their involvement and their support. So, yeah, it's... It's interesting work. It's interesting work.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't take anything personally. It's not about you. Resistance is not about you. It's about them. So can't take anything personally.
That is so true. So it sounds like we covered a lot of stuff here in regards to change. So I think I'm hoping that our listeners will come back and, you know, re-listen to this podcast and take some of these tips and experiences that you provided, and, you know, have them work on it at their day-to-day work. Is there anything else that we want to cover?
Well, I would just say that in managing change successfully, you know, it is a process, and the steps in that process are, you know, what we talked about, having the vision, the shared vision that hopefully will address a shared problem. Really understanding the impact, you know, who's going to be affected, who needs to do work in a different way or think in a different way, making sure those people are involved and engaged, keeping people in the organization informed about what's happening, when it's happening, why it's happening, and their role in having it be successful. And, you know, having a plan that's integrated with the project plan, so you're all working together across cultures, across functions, and then making sure people are prepared to work in a different way, to think in a different way, and then looking at how this change is going to be sustained. So if you follow that process, then you will greatly increase the probability of being successful. And it's a repeatable process. It's a scalable process. So I just want to, you know, emphasize that. And my book, Change Ready, really defines the process we talked about and how a manager can go through implementing this process. There's tools, there's templates. You know, it's really everything a manager would need.
this comes to the end of our episode, and I do want to thank you for sharing your experience, your knowledge, and I hope you'll come back for another episode on other topics. For our listeners, I urge everyone to go out, go to Amazon, and buy Rita's books. And for our listeners that would like more information of you or your services, you know, where should they go, Rita?
Well, they can contact me by email. So my email is coachrita365@gmail.com. And, of course, we can connect on LinkedIn. So Rita Brigette Martel. And check out my Amazon site, because I do have a lot of articles there that you can download. On LinkedIn, I've written several articles as well about the topics that we've talked about. And there's a lot of stuff I'm putting out there based on, you know, my experience. I want to share what I've learned so people can be ahead of the change curve.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again for a wonderful topic and being my guest today.
Thanks for the opportunity. Really enjoyed our discussion.
This is Elevate to Success, your host, Lloyd Philip B. with Infinity Bold. For more information on how we can help you with your project management, coaching, as well as mentoring, you can go to my website at www.infinitybold.com and send me an email. Please share this podcast and also tell a friend about us. Until then, keep it real.